Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Well, it's kind of an interesting time right now in WWE and wrestling, and the perfect guy to talk to right now is Kevin Eck, who everybody can check out his blog. Everybody can just go to the Eck Factor blog at kevineckwrestling.sportsblog.com. How's everything going, Kevin?
Well, I'll tell you, Brian, things could be a little better on my end. My football team sucks, mm-hmm. my baseball team sucks, and my fantasy football team sucks. But other than that, everything's great.
Full disclosure, you and I are in a fantasy football league together. And
Yes, we are.
I pointed this out the other day, and I will admit it. I am what is the most hated person in the world when it comes to fantasy football right now, in that I am the guy that got a win last week, and if I had played anybody but the opponent I played, I would have gotten my ass handed to me. But yet, I pulled out a victory.
It's not lost on me. I'm the guy who played the guy with the most points 2 weeks in a row, right? First week, I play the guy that has Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
Ooh.
And the second week, I mean, the guy had everybody. He had Antonio Brown and so many other guys, Fitzgerald that went off. So I would have won most weeks against most people both weeks, but instead I'm 0-2. The fact that I'm 0-2 and you're 2-0 is one of the greatest injustices in the world right now.
You know what? I equate my team to the Dallas Cowboys right now, and that, you know, somehow we're undefeated, but yet no Tony Romo and no Dez Bryant and Jason Witten's banged up. That's kind of my team right now, but somehow we keep finding ways to pull out wins.
Yeah, Dez Bryant, a guy that was on my team, by the way.
Sorry. Can I drive another nail in the heart real quick while we're on this?
Of course.
I want to thank you and your Baltimore Orioles for shipping Jake Arrieta to my Chicago Cubs.
Real sore spot. I'll tell you what, though. Jake Arrieta, when he was here, I was a big fan. You know, it was Arrieta and Tillman and Brian Mattis. They were going to be the anchors here forever. And none of them really panned out. I guess Tillman probably is the most. You know, Mattis is the guy that ended up in the bullpen. But Arrieta seemed like he had the most potential. I was a huge fan of his. But even I, as much as I liked him and thought he had potential, was not that upset when they traded him, because it just looked like he's just never going to get it. You know, he had back-to-back seasons where his ERA was about 5.
Yeah, he had control problems.
He was shelled every time out. And I was like, well, you might as well try to get something for him, because it didn't look like he's ever going to really develop into what we thought he was going to be.
Do you remember what
Chicago, and now he's Cy Young, you know, potential.
What did the Orioles get for Jake Arrieta?
Wasn't it, was that the deal where they got Pedro Strop?
Oh, that was the Scott Feldman trade. Yeah, the Cubs Cubs got Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop, who is their eighth inning guy right now.
That's right. And we got Scott Feldman.
Thank you for that trade. That's awesome.
Unbelievable. Yeah, we thought we were in the pennant race that year, and we thought Feldman was going to be, you know, get that veteran pitcher to help you down the stretch.
Hmm. You also got backup catcher Steve Clevenger and an undisclosed amount of cash to use for international bonuses.
Well, I don't know how that went, but Clevenger's been okay as a backup guy.
There you go. So you gave up you got okay guys in return for a guy that is going to finish first or second for the Cy Young this year.
Well, at least you're not rubbing it in.
I'm not rubbing it in. I'm very thankful. Trust me, man. If I could send them I might send them a gift basket, you know.
Make me root for him to blow his elbow.
No, don't say that, dude.
All right.
Do not say that. I mean, he's a godsend. He's a guy that a couple of years ago, you didn't know if he was going to find the plate or being a guy, and now he's found his control, and he's unbelievable.
Yeah, the second he took off black and orange and put on blue, he figured it out. It's amazing. I guess I give it all the credit to your pitching coach.
Well, normally it's the other way around when it comes to the Cubs, so I'm grateful that it was for the Cubs' benefit this time, finally. Let's get into some WWE, because when you were saying that it's not really a good time right now, I thought that's where you're going, was WWE, because they seem to be in a slump right now. And it's kind of weird in that you have all this hype for SummerSlam, and people were really jazzed about that. And then now it's It's kind of like that post-Mania slump. Now you've got the post-SummerSlam slump. Why do you think it is when it comes to these highs and lows? And it seems like every year it's the same time where there's a slump, or apparently it feels like a slump, and the ratings are definitely showing it right now.
I mean, the ratings don't lie. There's no question they're in a rating slump. I personally don't think the shows are, I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't think the shows are as bad as the ratings reflect. I'm not saying the shows are great every week. I think it's kind of been hit and miss. I don't think anything's been awful. I mean, look, they took a lot, like, use the Kane storyline as an example. They took months. I mean, this is not hotshot booking or anything like that. This is, or illogical storytelling. They built to this Kane-Seth Rollins match that's probably going to take place in Hell in a Cell for months. They've been laying the groundwork for that. At one point, I thought it was going to be a SummerSlam match because we all knew Lesnar and Undertaker was going to headline SummerSlam. I thought you might have Kane and Seth Rollins for the WWE title there. So they built that thing for months. To me, it's been good storytelling. It's been good performances. Kane and Rollins, I think every time they're together, they knock it out of the park. So now we're seeing the payoff to that finally. They're going to culminate in a match with Hell in a Cell. I think there's been a lot of good storytelling. I think some of the undercard stories have been pretty good. You know, they dropped the ball big time with the Divas Revolution. I mean, I don't think that's any secret. But for the most part, I don't think WWE has been bad, but they're just not, for whatever reason, connecting with the crowd the way and with the audience. And I'm not sure really what it is. You know, it's funny because I know some people take the theory that it's just because of guys like Kane and Sting and John Cena, and it's the older guys who are constantly being put in these prominent positions rather than younger guys. But I kind of look at it from the other side and say, who's the WWE World Heavyweight Champion right now? It's Seth Rollins. Who are the shows built around? Seth Rollins. He's in more segments every week than anyone else on the roster. He's the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He's in most of the pay-per-view main events. There's the young guy in his prime that is in a prominent spot. That's what the people want. But clearly, as the top guy and the guy with the belt around his waist, he's not drawing ratings. So does some of it fall on him? I mean, I'll ask you that. What do you think?
I think to some extent it does. But without casting all of the blame on WWE Creative, I will give some. And my thinking for that is he's not an established world champion. This is his first opportunity of being a world champion. I think it's different for the first time you win it than other times because – especially for somebody like Rollins. It wasn't like anybody really thought that was going to happen. He just kind of jumped up out of nowhere. And even though he was the Money in the Bank guy. But I think that first time when you get that opportunity, you should protect the guy a little bit more to make sure that people really think of him and see him as the top guy, as the world champion. And I don't think they've done a good enough job in doing that necessarily.
I see that point. I mean, I look at it this way, and again, I'm a Seth Rollins fan. You know, I like his work. I think he's way better on the microphone than I ever thought he would be. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, even at this point, even being a fan at this point, when I see him come out on Monday Night Raw at 8:00 to cut another promo, I kind of roll my eyes. I mean, I feel like I've heard everything he has to say. You know, he's in five or six backstages, it seems like, on every show. I just think he's been overexposed.
Yes.
And to me, that, I think, is a big part of it, is everything centered around Seth Rollins. That's, yes, me, you know, my opinion of what I find sometimes hard to watch about Raw, it's that everything is wrapped up around one guy to the point where I don't know if he's that guy, you know. And it goes back to WrestleMania where, obviously, plans were changed. I mean, as everyone knows, Roman Reigns was supposed to be the guy. Roman Reigns was supposed to be crowned at WrestleMania and off to the races. And because the crowd didn't really accept Roman at that level, and they felt he was being pushed down their throats, it ends up Seth Rollins cashes in his Money in the Bank contract in the main event, and they go in a completely different direction. It would be interesting if we could go back in time. What would have happened if WWE would have stuck to their guns and said, "Look, we know there's some backlash here with the fans, but we're going to go with the plan, and we'll see what happens. Go with Roman Reigns." How would things have been different had the shows been built around Roman as the World Heavyweight Champion? You know, obviously, we'll never know, but But, you know, Seth Rollins was not, that was not any long-term plan. That was something that was decided pretty much on the fly because Roman was being rejected by the fans. So who knows what WWE really had in store for Roman getting the title and where they were going after that. You know, I think that's something to consider as well. The plans were thrown, you know, all the best laid plans went awry.
And I totally agree that Rollins has been overexposed. You know, you bring up the part about him opening the show and doing a promo, and that's been, I think, one of the problems, too, with Raw. And it's not like it's something that's happened recently, and it's not just Rollins, but this formula that typically happens of the show's got to open with this long promo, and they didn't do it this past Monday night, but so many times it happens. Why is that seemingly the formula from a time where even when you were working there, you know, on creative, to where that's lasted, whether or not the ratings show that should be something that should be happening or not?
Well, I think the ratings, at least in the past, actually did show that when you had a promo in Seg 1 versus when you had action in Seg 1, the promo usually did better. And I think, and I don't know if that's still the case. I haven't looked at, you know, I mean, we used to get the minute-by-minute ratings segments and, you know, the breakdown of each segment, what the rating was. I haven't seen those since I stopped working there, so I don't know if that's still the case. But at the time, you know, the talking did actually do a little better than action. And I don't mind the promo so much. Just mix it up a little bit more. Just don't give me the same guy or the same couple of guys every time. You know, start it with the Wyatt family with a promo, something different. That's great. You know, you turn on your TV at 8 o'clock, and here comes the Wyatt entrance with the fireflies and all that. That's, you know, Vince had a big thing about, like, if you're flipping the channels at the top of the hour, is there something that'll make you stop, even if you're not a hardcore wrestling fan? You're flipping through the channels, and you see Bray Wyatt's entrance, and you see the arena all lit up with the cell phones, and that you might stop and say, huh, what's this? And, you know, that's what they did this past week. Bray Wyatt, Wyatt family came out first, and what I really loved about that segment was it was a promo that led right into action. So you got the show off to a hot start. And I think if they, you know, you can't do that every week, but if you just mix it up a little bit more, I think that's, you know, it just, it's got to be something that you got to have a variety. You can't just have, okay, I know for the next 5 or 6 weeks, every time I see Seg 1, it's going to be talking. You know, mix it up a little bit, and I think that helps. And again, have different people do it. I kind of felt bad for Seth after a while because he wasn't saying anything different. You know, he was out there saying the same. There was nothing ever new in what he was saying. And I felt like almost like, man, the guy's being put in a no-win situation. Like, no one could really get that same material over when you're just basically saying the same stuff all the time.
Right.
Especially as a heel.
Yeah, and I agree that. I think that you need to shake it up when it comes to that opening segment and have different people. I wonder, though, can you start a show with a promo and make it shorter? And maybe that would be a little bit more engaging for the audience. And the other thing is, too, and I'll ask you this, going back to when you were working there as well, how much thought was there ever to, let's start the show, hot open, pyro, showing the fans going crazy, and then immediately right then, because it doesn't happen all the time, but it's happened a few times, immediately right then, go through, here's what you're going to see in the show. Here's 3 or 4 things you're going to get, and then go into whatever that opening segment's going to be.
Yeah, I don't ever remember there being a whole lot of discussion, you know, about that kind of, about going that route. You know, it's not a bad idea. You're saying basically kind of set up at the top of the show, here's what's on, here's what you'll see tonight. I don't think that's a bad idea. Sometimes you'll get it in the context of a promo, which you'll have the authority out there, right, saying,
right,
here's what you're going to see tonight. I don't think that's a bad idea. I would love if they started, and again, you could do this certainly every week, but I don't mind starting the show hot once in a while, which started with action. And I'm not even talking about a match. Started with a brawl or something. Remember the days back during the Monday Night Wars? Both companies did it. You'd come on the air hot. There's a brawl going. My God, fans, what's going on in the back here? And you know, you'd see a brawl going on. Like, start the show hot every once in a while. I think that could help. Again, you can't do that every week. You can't hotshot that. Then it becomes not special. But
right.
I can't remember. Maybe you can. You have a better memory than me. You're a lot younger than me, Brian. Maybe you remember the last time they started a show hot. I don't
think they had the hardcore title still. I'm not sure.
Well, going back a few years.
Yeah, and here's another thing, too, that's come up in discussion lately on the podcast here. is that one of the vehicles that was used effectively, and I'm not saying you have to do it all the time, but was definitely used during the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars and even prior to that, was using cliffhangers. And it seems very rare that we get cliffhangers now, and I'm surprised by that because, like I said, you don't use it all the time necessarily, but it can be, I think, an effective tool to get people going, what's going to happen next week? What is going to happen then? You know, I know it's a little bit more difficult now from a standpoint, if you do it on Raw, do you pay it off on SmackDown or do you wait till Raw? When sometimes we see it, you know, on a pay-per-view, but it just feels like that's missing, and it's something that can be very effective.
Well, there's no question. The cliffhanger is an effective storytelling tool. And, you know, I think you see it somewhat, you know, where you can't wait to see what happens next week kind of thing, but certainly not as often as you should or as they could do. You know, that's why I like, even though it was just a small thing and it wasn't a main event or anything like that, but I like the fact that we didn't know who Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose's mystery partner was going to be heading into the pay-per-view. Just a little thing like that, I think, to entice the, you know, it's good to sit around and then try to guess, well, who's that guy going to be? You know, some people were even thinking it could be The Rock, and that's great. You want people to shoot high, you know. You think you might, hey, maybe I'll get the network because I think The Rock coming back. So, yeah, I mean, cliffhangers, any kind of storytelling, you know, it's episodic storytelling. So it just makes sense. You want to leave the viewer always wanting to see what's going to happen next week. You want this week's episode to be satisfying enough, but that it also leaves you wanting to see what happens next week. And you're right, it's been a long time, I think, since Raw ended, and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to see the next episode. And SmackDown does sort of, you know, mess it up a little bit, but with the main storylines, a lot of times they're only happening on Raw anyway. So there are ways to, I think, get around it on. I mean, you never see John Cena on SmackDown, or, you know, you don't have to see Seth Rollins there every week, you know, either. So I think there are ways you could do that and make it more, you know, Monday to Monday kind of thing. You end with a cliffhanger on Monday and you pay it off the following Monday. I think there is a way to do that, and they probably should do it more than they do.
You know, when we talk about this, you know, supposed slump right now, and obviously the ratings are down this time of the year, and, you know, we could talk about, you know, football is back, whether it's the NFL or college football, and that's going to bite into some of their numbers, and there's so many other things to watch on TV. And, you know, it also, a lot of it obviously comes down to, are you putting on, you know, exciting television, and do people want to see the stars that you have? And this goes to the whole thing of, I wonder, and I tend to believe this, I don't think they're doing a good enough job of creating stars from a standpoint. We see some of the other guys that are newer faces over the last few years, and while they can be liked, do you really see them as huge superstars? And I think the answer to that in a lot of cases is no. And I think a lot of that is just because of the, you know, even Steven booking is that, like, okay, you get in a feud, you win this one, you lose this one, you win this one, you lose this one. And it doesn't feel like anybody is being given that opportunity in a lot of cases to really, you know, get going and then establish themselves. And I think that translates over to the audience.
Well, it's a valid point, you know, but I'm looking at it from both sides, right? From being on the creative side and also looking at it now as a viewer, it's frustrating sometimes from the creative standpoint as, okay, people want, like you mentioned, even Steven booking, and you want a guy you could believe in and so forth. Okay, well, Roman Reigns was going to be that guy. And what did the fans say? No, we don't want him to be that guy. So, I mean, Roman Reigns was treated special. He was protected. He was put in the Shield from the day he walked in the company. The Shield was protected in the booking, and Roman was a guy. And look, again, I was there at the time. Vince was, and I know we've talked about this before, Vince was very cognizant of the fact that he did not want to seem like we were shoving Roman down people's throats. So if you noticed, it was gradual. You know, he always had the big power spots in the Shield, and then, but you know, Roman, it was always kind of bubbling underneath. You could see this guy was going to be something, but he wasn't shoved down people's throats. They tried to do it gradual to where the people wanted it more than we were giving it to you kind of thing. And it seemed like we were going on a good path with him. I think when he got injured, that kind of messed things up a little bit. And then, you know, when he was brought back, suddenly he was cutting his, you know, he didn't do very well on some of these, like, via satellite interviews. And then, you know, Vince had him cutting these really nonsensical promos, which didn't help him at all. But, you know, there's a guy. No even Steven booking there. He was protected. He was a guy that very rarely lost and was being moved up gradually, and people rejected it. So I also look at even Steven booking this way. If a guy loses two matches in a row, it's, oh, my God, you're burying him, right? So how can you win? I saw it the other day when Stardust and Neville, right? Stardust and the Ascension won the six-man at Night of Champions. And the babyfaces won the next night. And people were like, oh, there you go, even Steven booking. Now, if you would have had the match two nights in a row and the heels would have went over both times, those same fans would have said, why are they burying Neville? I don't feel like you can win.
Is the bigger question then, why are they having a rematch already?
It could be. But, I mean, they want to keep the program going. You know,
right.
I think that was the main reason. People have to sit down and really... It's easy to armchair quarterback, and I know we all do it, but again, having been on the other side, there are only so many players. You know, you've got a roster full of players, and you're trying to keep everybody, to some extent, relevant. At the end of the day, yes, someone's going to win the blow-off to the program, but you know, there's going to be some even Steven and back and forth, because it's not like the old days where this is a territory where you're going to, you know, bring some guys in, they're going to work from, you know, stay here for 5 or 6 months, and then, you know, you build them up on the way in, and then they'll have their big match, and then you'll job them out on the way out. They move on to the next territory. These guys are here for years and years. So, you know, you want Bray Wyatt to still be relevant if he's going to be in a program with Roman Reigns or with Ryback or with Dean Ambrose or whoever. But you also want those other guys to stay relevant as well. So, yes, there's going to be some even Steven aspect to it. You know, but I look at a guy like Kevin Owens. I think Kevin Owens has been booked really, really well in WWE. And you'll have some critics who will say, well, you know, they fed him to John Cena and it's the same old stuff. And now Kevin Owens came in, beat John Cena on his first night, had three straight pay-per-view matches with him. All three were great matches. Okay, he lost two out of the three. He lost to John Cena. Not a bad guy to lose to. After that, I don't think Owens has been pinned by anybody else. He beat Cesaro a couple times. I know he beat Neville. He beat Ziggler, and now he beat Ryback for the Intercontinental title. I mean, that's not even Steven booking to me. That's, you're making a guy.
Right.
I feel like they've made Kevin Owens, and he's relevant. So I don't, you know, it's like I said, it's a catch-22, you know. You want everything, but you can't make everybody, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right. I think one of the challenges that they have, and I don't know what the answer to it necessarily is, but with so much TV that is on there right now, and we sit here and we say we want to see longer storylines, we want to see longer feuds, we want to see stuff that goes over, you know, not just 1 month, but, you know, 3 or 4 months. But how do you do enough stuff in between where it feels fresh, you're progressing the storyline, but at the same time, you don't feel like everything is a rematch? And I think that's one of the things, is that how do you balance all those things where we're seeing something new, but at the same time, there's going to be some new stuff, but there's also going to be some other stuff where this is an ongoing feud. And are you doing a good enough job of actually telling the story of what is the crux of that feud and really getting down to the different chapters of it?
Well, again, and that is the art of it, right? That's the art to this, you know, to having a story arc, and it starts off as whatever issue, and then you have to build it, and then maybe you bring other, you know, it splinters off. You add more layers to it, you know, that's the challenge of it. But I look at back in the day, I mean, my God, how long did the Von Erichs and the Freebirds feud with each other?
Years.
You had years. I mean, you had some long-standing programs with guys that went on for months and sometimes years at a time. So now it's like if you have a three-month program, by the time you get to month three, the fans are bored with it. My God, how many times are these guys going to wrestle each other? But yet they want well-told stories.
But that was a different age from a standpoint that you didn't have TV all the time like that. I mean, you had some, but
right.
I mean, it was just a different age.
And that's the challenge. Again, like I said, now you're doing episodic television. It isn't the old days where you're doing a syndicated show and you have squash matches and you build up to the shows at the arenas. It is different and people got spoiled during the Monday Night era where, you know, before Nitro came around, Raw was basically still doing squash matches for the most part. You weren't getting the real big names. You weren't getting pay-per-view type matchups every single Monday night, almost like you're getting now. So people have become conditioned to that, and it is harder to tell stories when you have to have, you've got, first of all, a three-hour show on Monday, another two-hour show on Thursday, and you've got to have matches with marquee names, yet you're still trying to stretch this story out, but yet it's a weekly episodic drama. So it's a very big challenge, and I don't want to sound like a WWE apologist. I'm just trying to look at it, you know, from a fair perspective. It's a challenging way to tell stories. Could WWE do a little bit better job of it? Yeah, I'm sure. You know, obviously the viewers aren't getting what they feel like they want out of this right now, and that's right. Why the numbers are down to where they are.
Well, we sit here and we
talk. I almost advocated. I think once in a while it's okay to hot shot. That's why I said this. I wrote this on the blog. Now, in hindsight, it would have been a great idea because he got hurt. Why not hot shot the title to Sting? You know, I would have done, if the ratings are this, if you're in this much of a slump, why not have Sting win the title at Night of Champions? You could then have the rematch the very next night on Raw. Again, this is all hindsight, assuming he wouldn't have gotten hurt. You do the title switch on Sunday night. Nobody really expected it. Monday, Seth demands his rematch. Now, all of a sudden, you're going up against Sunday Night Football, but you promote at 8 o'clock or even before you go on the air. You can promote it on social media. Sting's going to have to defend the title tonight in a rematch against Seth Rollins. You can put the title right back on Seth if that's what you want to do. I don't know why, when you're doing 2 fives every week, you wouldn't do something like that.
Well, now the question is going to be, you know, about is Sting going to wrestle again? And we don't know the severity of his injuries right now. He's heard so many different things that I don't know if it's a neck injury, a spinal injury, a back injury, and how severe it is. Was it just whiplash or was it something more? And we're going to find that out. But even if it was, say, a severe case of whiplash, do you think that WWE will use Sting again, considering he got banged up and this is a guy that is 56 years old? And do they want to take that risk with a guy that age?
Well, I think, again, I don't know. But I think that if they're convinced that physically he is okay and he can, and he's cleared to wrestle again, if Vince thinks there's money to be made, this is a big if. If he thinks he can make money with Sting in another match at WrestleMania, whether it's a retirement match or whatever it is, I think they'll do that if Vince is convinced that there's no real health risk to Sting. I think he would do that. And I look at The Undertaker as the example. Now, granted, I think Vince thinks there's a whole different level of value in The Undertaker than there is in Sting.
Absolutely.
And he's probably right about that. But, you know, The Undertaker was in really bad shape after that match with Brock. I don't know that it's ever really, the fans even realize how bad a shape he was in after that. It's public that he collapsed backstage after the match. He went to the hospital that night, and he had some lingering problems for months after, to where, and again, I was still with WWE at this point. They didn't know whether Undertaker was going to ever wrestle again. And I think Vince was almost starting to come to the realization that it's probably not going to ever happen again. You know, but Undertaker, you know, as time went on, he healed up, he got himself back in shape, and now you see he was just back in the ring, and he's going to be back in the ring in Hell in a Cell, because I think Vince thinks there's still money to be made with him. So again, I think that's what it comes back to. If Vince is going to look at Sting, assess what his value is, how much more money can we make, is there money being left on the table if we don't use him again? And then obviously he'll look at his physical condition. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I know he's a few years older. I think he's 5 or 6 years older than Undertaker.
Yeah.
But I think Sting is in a lot better. I think he's in better shape than, you know, I think Taker's had a lot more serious issues over the recent years than Sting has. I think age wise, you know, Taker's body has a little more wear and tear on it.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. Yeah.
And the other thing is,
like I said,
yeah, when you look at what Taker's doing in the rare matches that he has, he's taking on a huge guy and taking suplexes from this big guy in these physical matches.
Yeah. Yeah, for a guy that's had as many problems as Undertaker's had, it seems like the last guy you would want to put him in the ring with,
right,
literally the last guy, is Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. See, I think one of the things that people wonder about now is with the numbers going down, is it one of these situations where we always say, numbers go down, Vince is going to go back to what he feels like has worked for him, or just go back to what he knows, and that's, let's rely on the big guy. So, with numbers being down, do you think we will see more Kane, more Big Show, more Ryback, just bigger, muscular guys?
I think that's a fair characterization of Vince, but I think it's unfair in the sense that I don't think he's just going to look for any big guy.
Yeah.
I think it has to be certain big guys.
Do you think we're going to see more Big Show?
I don't, and that's just what I was going to say. I think Vince is smart enough to know that Big Show has diminishing value. I think he knows that. I know he was just put over strong on Monday over Cesaro, and that was, to me, that was all about just trying to build him up for this October 3rd Madison Square Garden show against Brock Lesnar.
It is. That match is a mistake,
it
though.
Is. I don't think that you're going to see Big Show challenging for the WWE title. Now, who knows? I'll probably be proven wrong.
All right.
I don't think Vince is going to go that route, and I don't think he sees... You know, to me, Kane is a great character, and I think there are times when Kane is stale, and yes, you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe Kane's still around. But when Glenn Jacobs, I think he's such an underrated performer, as an all-around performer, and I think the stuff he's doing right now with the whole Jekyll and Hyde type deal, like, I'm excited for this. Like, I'm looking forward to this program, and I'm looking forward to Seth against Demon Kane, possibly in a Hell in a Cell match. I think that's great. I don't think you're going to see Kane as a prominent guy beyond this program all the time because he's a quote-unquote big guy. So I don't think you're going to see that. I do think if there's any big guy that's going to get a push, again, I think it's going to be Roman Reigns. I think that's the guy that Vince is still looking at as his money player. And, I mean, honestly, I think you know how I feel about it. He's the guy I would handpick on the roster.
Right.
I don't see anybody else that I would put in that spot. I really don't.
I agree. It's just I'm not exactly sure how to get him back on track. I mean, I don't think it'll be... Well, he's just been iced a little bit. And the good thing is, if they want to put him, and I still think they will, put him in a prominent position at Mania, you've got plenty of time to get there, and you can start those steps right now. And... it's not just going out there and having good matches. He obviously has to do a little bit more on the mic. And I thought what they did, you know, over the last couple of weeks with him on the mic, I thought has been a lot more effective in that it's been shorter promos and it's just, I'm a badass. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to fight and I'm going to win. And that's what we should be getting from Roman.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
That's what I want to see.
He got in trouble. Like I said, he got in trouble when, and again, I wasn't working there at this time, so I don't know, but I heard the rumors were that Vince started personally scripting Roman's promos himself, and judging by the tone of them, I could certainly see where that could have been the case.
So you should have been writing the promos for Roman, and he would be the world champion right now, but because it was Vince, he's not.
Well, I'll tell you, that's funny you should mention that, because at one point I did write, this was near the end of my tenure there, maybe this is why I got let go, I don't know.
You're a better writer than Vince McMahon.
What's that?
So you're a better writer for Roman Reigns than Vince McMahon is. And he was jealous.
I'm not going to lie to you. I probably am. Actually, I wrote a Roman promo that I thought was pretty good. You know, we had kept his stuff for the most part short and sweet, but we knew where we were going with him. And I even said to somebody, I was like, you know, if we're getting this guy ready for this position where he's going to be the world heavyweight champion, we better start giving him some more mic time because, you know, he's going to have to say more than, you know, I'm going to kick your ass, believe that. He's going to have to do more than that. So let's start giving him more mic time. And I wrote a longer Roman promo, and I remember Vince saw it, and he's like, oh, that's too much. You know, he wouldn't say all that, blah, blah, blah. You know, short and sweet with Roman. And basically he wanted just, I'm going to kick your ass, believe that. So then after I leave WWE, next thing I know, he's cutting promos where he's saying, like, suffering succotash.
Yes.
Lines like that. I was like, whoa, so Vince didn't, that's his idea of, you know, giving him more to say? Because what I had written was basically still kind of a tough guy, you know, kind of tough guy talk, but just more of it, a little bit longer, saying a little bit more. And God, Vince went that whole other direction. And I think, you know, I honestly believe that's a big reason why the people were, they could see that he was being pushed, so... I know that turns some fans off, and it's like, oh, he's the handpicked guy.
Well,
I think that he was trying to be something that he wasn't. It was almost like they were trying to have him be the Rock light by cutting, you know, these silly, funny little lines and stuff. Like, that just wasn't him.
The mystique was gone from him.
At least, I could see, Roman wasn't even comfortable doing it. You could see that he was, okay, this is what I'm a company guy, and this is what they want me to say, so I'm going to go say it. But I don't think he was comfortable saying it.
Absolutely. And you could see it so many different times in that. I think, you know, in the little that I've been around him, and you've been around him a hell of a lot more than me, but in seeing him, you know, making public appearances and speaking with people, he's got a ton of charisma and a lot of personality.
There's no question.
It's just,
absolutely,
he is being the company guy, and he's doing these scripts that just are not him, and he has a hard time in making those things into him and putting him in his own, you know, wrapping himself around that when it's not true to what he is. And there's some people that can do that, and there's some people that can't, and he's just one of the guys that can't. So they're not writing to his strengths, and that's a problem. And I think once that came out and that got exposed after his injury and, you know, suffering succotash and all of that, that's when people said, you know what, this guy's a goof, and I'm not going to get behind
him. I there's no question. And I almost wonder, you know, I know when the babyface turn really wasn't getting over, and, you know, people didn't want to see him win the title from Brock, that a lot of people were like, well, I guess, you know, the thing is you have to turn him heel. And I kind of fought that. And I said, nah, you know, I still feel like he can get there. Just have to maybe be a little more patient. But now I'm almost wondering, would it benefit him if he did? You know, a lot of people were thinking Ambrose might turn heel. But what if you did turn Reigns? And he kind of fought back against the people who haven't really embraced him and all that stuff. He made him more of a badass again, and now more of a ruthless badass. And I wonder if you did that to ultimately make him, would the babyface turn then when it happened, you know, would it click?
I totally agree
with
that.
If you got to see him. What's that?
I agree with that, because I think before people can really, really love Roman Reigns, I think you really need to hate him because he's a heel.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see out of that guy. And I hope they do it. I think it'd be great. You know, it all just goes into what they have planned going into WrestleMania next year. And if they've already got a good idea of who his opponent's going to be, then maybe they can't do that. And I can understand that. So I want to go back to the one thing you said. You know, we were talking about, so this Madison Square Garden special, it's going to be on the network. So it's Brock Lesnar against Big Show. I understand why they're doing it from a standpoint of, hey, watch Brock beat a giant, and you've got to build a Big Show for that. But to me, Big Show, while he definitely has a place in the company, and I'm not saying that, I think something like that is an opportunity to give people something different and something fresh that you say, okay, I'm going to go out of my way now to watch this show, whether it's going to be a little bit tough, I think, live on a Saturday night against college football. But to watch it within the first 24 hours, if you're not watching it live, say, I want to watch this show because I'm going to see a different matchup for Brock Lesnar. I'm going to see something different. And I don't know how intriguing or how much people want to go out of the way and say, oh, we're going to see Brock Lesnar against Big Show again.
I see your point. But I would ask you, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. If you were booking that show and you didn't want to see Brock against Big Show, who would you put in that spot for Brock's opponent? You talk about a different matchup, a fresh matchup. So who would you put in that spot, knowing that it's a house show?
Right.
It's a house show that's going to be on the network, so you're giving a little bit more juice.
Yes.
But it's not one of your pay-per-views or anything like that, or network specials, whatever we're going to call them these days. But so who would you like to see in that spot?
It would have been one of two guys to me. I would have either done, and mind you, you have to rewind a little bit with the booking, and no matter what, Brock is going to win. Maybe Cesaro, and he's a guy that we talk about people wanting to make. And I think there's been not an overwhelming amount of the audience, but there's been a good chunk that have wanted to see Cesaro. And now, you know, he's been the guy that good wrestler, makes everybody look good, but is going to lose. The other guy that I might have really gone to, I think would have been something that would have caught some eyeballs, is maybe put Kevin Owens in there. But I think
Kevin Owens, is that's something you want to potentially build to.
Maybe.
I think if they continue where they're going with Owens, you could potentially get him to a spot where he, him against Lesnar, would mean something on a bigger pay-per-view.
How about, what about Dean Ambrose?
I don't think Cesaro would work, because I just don't think people look at Cesaro as a guy right now, because of the way he's been booked. You would see him in being in the same ring against Lesnar and having any kind of a chance, and I also think Vince wouldn't want to do two baby faces against each other.
Well, what about Ambrose? I mean, I know it's two baby faces, but you get this wild man aspect of, Ambrose, and you don't know what is going to happen possibly, and it could turn to a wild brawl, and you've got Lesnar out there manhandling the guy?
You could. I mean, I think Vince would really shy away from, I think he would want it to be a heel. And that's kind of where I was coming from, was like, all right, I get, you know, it's like they want to sacrifice somebody, basically, who's not in a program with somebody else. Big Show's kind of, he's a special attraction, or he should be at this point. Mm-hmm. He's not really in a program. I mean, they did a little thing with Miz, but I wouldn't even call that a program. He's kind of just there on the roster right now with nothing to do. And he's a giant, right? So I think Vince's thinking was, all right, that's the guy we're going to feed. You know, it's a spectacle. It's a guy, it's two guys that do have some history with each other. So even though it's not a fresh matchup, you could bring up, hey, these guys have had some battles. They broke a ring together and all that kind of. You could show those clips if you want and build it up. Now, obviously, no matter what you do, everyone knows, and I wrote this too, Brock Lesnar's going over against Big Show. Everyone knows Big Show has no chance, but you do the best you can to build it up. But I don't know who else you would feed to him. I don't think you could do any other baby face on the roster. I think Kevin Owens is something you want to save. And then, I don't know who else it would be. I mean, if you remember when they did the Beast in the East thing, it was Kofi Kingston.
Right.
You know, do you go that route again where you just, the attraction is Brock killing someone?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Matter?
Well, here's the other thing, too.
Yeah, we wouldn't do that either.
We sit there and say, we want to put him against a heel, but here's the question then. Is Brock Lesnar really a babyface? Because he just went up against The Undertaker. Now, I know Undertaker, you know, hit him with two low blows leading into the last match, but does anybody really believe that Undertaker is a heel?
I do. You know, and I've seen other people say that too. Even, you know, I think Jim Ross commented on it. You know, Undertaker's not a heel. Well, why isn't he? I mean, there are different shades of different levels of being a heel. But to me, there's no question that Brock Lesnar has been cast in the babyface role in this program and Undertaker as the heel.
Yes.
Brock beat him fair and square at WrestleMania. There was no shenanigans. He ended the streak fair and square. Undertaker comes back bitter that his streak ended, and he's, what is it, three low blows that he's given to Brock since he's come back?
Yeah,
he
something like that.
He tapped out in the match at SummerSlam, and then went over afterwards. After tapping out, and the referee didn't see it, he hits him with another low blow and goes over. He's come back and said he's remorseless, he's this, he's that. He's a heel. He cheats to win, he takes low blow, he takes cheap shots, and he's bitter about losing a match fair and square. To me, it's very obvious. Brock's the face, Taker's the heel. It's a little bit more subtle. It's not as white hat, black hat, and Brock certainly is not your typical baby face because he's an ass kicker. But, yeah, I think it's clear that they've been assigned those roles. And I have a feeling, my feeling about all this is Undertaker is a heel in this program only.
Right.
And I think it probably ends with a sign of respect. And, you know, I could be totally wrong, but I think at the end of this, Taker's going to be back to being normal Undertaker. You know, he's going to be himself again, which is a baby.
Well, I think this is just a unique feud in that Taker is the heel, Brock is the babyface. If you really look at it, but when it comes down to it, it doesn't really matter. It's just kind of like it's whoever the audience is that night that's there in attendance and who they want to cheer for on that night, which is, I mean, because either guy could be treated either way, you know, especially right. With Taker being the legend that he is. So it's one of those things where, yeah, we could try to make a guy heel and try to make this guy babyface, whatever, but it doesn't really matter with this one.
No, but I actually like the way it's been written because, to me, Undertaker, you have to make him somewhat heelish in this because his motivation, to me, is heelish, right? He had the streak for all those years. You would think somebody finally beat him. I know the rationale for him being angry was, well, Heyman bragged about it every week, and that got him pissed off or something.
I mean,
I think that's a little weak. I think him coming back pissed off that Brock ended his streak clean, again, he didn't cheat to win. You know, it makes him heelish that it ate at him all this time, and he's bitter, and he wants to avenge it. And the fact that he'll go to any length to do it, you know, it's. I think it's been very well written. That Taker is the guy who knows Brock is younger than him, got the better of him, and now his streak ended, and now if he wants to get any vengeance back, he can't do it coming straight at him. He's got to take cheap shots. That makes him heelish, but it's also a realistic story in a sense, right? I mean, I think he's a heel, but he's not so heinous that it's just he's gone over the top and his whole personality has changed. It's been more of a subtle heel. Okay? To me, it reminds me of when Shawn Michaels faced Hulk Hogan. Sean was a heel for that program only. The very next night after that program ended, he was a babyface again, just like he was before it started.
Right. Do you think it should have been, because I agree, and I overall like the story, but do you think it should be spelled out a little bit more, hit fans over the head, kind of either with the announcer spelling that out or a Paul Heyman spelling that out, saying, you're just jealous because my guy is younger, he's bigger, he's better, he is all these different things, which has been alluded to, obviously, but it hasn't, like, literally been spelled out in that manner.
Well, when you say that, I can actually hear Vince right now in my head saying, God damn it, we don't have to lead the audience, you know, let's be more sophisticated in our storytelling.
Mm.
You know, and that was something that he would bring. Yes, I guess you could make it even more, you know, black and white. I guess you could do that. I think they've done it to some extent. To me, if you're watching, I don't know how you miss that Undertaker's kind of the bad guy in this.
Right.
You know, to me, it's been pretty odd. I mean, how many more low blows? How many times does Brock have to get hit in the nuts for you to realize that Taker's not taking the honorable route here?
But sometimes that's kind of what the role of, you know, the announce team can be, especially when it comes to the play-by-play guy. Because traditionally, the play-by-play guy is going to be somebody that sides with the babyface and points things out like that.
Right.
And says, look what this dirty thing that this guy did. And it just, and that's supposed to be the side of who the fan is supposed to root for if you, you know, are the person that likes rooting for the good guy.
That's true. I mean, I see both sides, but I mean, I can also hear, you know, potentially, you know, Vince saying, we don't want the announcers to necessarily go over the top with it and lead the audience into them saying, hey, basically coming right out and almost saying without using the word, hey, Undertaker's a heel here.
Yeah.
You know, I think he wants the audience to kind of draw their own conclusions on that. I think he showed, I should be the last person to speak for Vince. Every time I thought I had him figured out, I was completely wrong. But I think that's where he's going is, hey, look, by his actions, you're going to see that Undertaker's the bad guy here. But we're not going to hit you over the head with it and say, why, Undertaker, why? You know, why did you do it kind of thing?
Right. Now, so
you're not going to see Undertaker hanging out with, I don't think you're going to be booking, you know, matches where he's teaming up with other heels against babyface and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. I think it's just for this specific program, that's how these guys are being painted. And I think you really have to paint. I think Taker needs to be the subtle heel because Brock just turned babyface not that long ago. And I think he's got to be, you don't want to change his personality. He's got to be the badass babyface, you know, but I think you want him as the guy you're rooting for here more. The long-term money, obviously, is in Brock Lesnar. It's not in Undertaker. Undertaker doesn't have that many fights left. So you want Brock to be the guy you're rooting for here, kind of more the sympathetic of the two. I think you want to see him, you should want to see him beat Undertaker's ass. I think that's kind of the way, because long-term, Brock's your guy.
Maybe Taker needs to hang Brock Lesnar on a symbol. I don't want to call it a cross. It's a symbol.
No. Well, as long as it's a symbol, it's okay.
Maybe. I mean, they're going back to 90 storylines. I saw it on Monday Night with Kane grabbing Seth Rollins and taking him to hell.
Yes.
You know,
hey, man, I don't know about you. I love that. I love that kind of stuff.
I didn't have a problem with that on Monday. I really didn't. I mean,
I loved it.
When it comes to the, you know, so Lesnar and Taker, third time in the series at Hell in a Cell, they announced it, obviously, on Night of Champions in the video package narrated by Heyman. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I am surprised, though, on Raw, they didn't, like, do a big thing about that. They aired that video package again, but to me, we're in a day and age where it's all about the big event, whether it's Mayweather and Pacquiao, or whether it's the Super Bowl, or whether it's WrestleMania and even SummerSlam, because all the other pay-per-views just kind of dwindle a little bit more. But those are big events. They're getting a lot of big coverage and people talking about them, and, you know, WWE's trending, and we're a big event society. And to me, this is a big match, so you can make this a big event. So to me, it's like, promote it. You know, get out there on Raw and hit everybody with it. Guess what? These guys, they're going to have another match, the third one, start doing the video package for this thing right now. And there was barely a mention of it outside that video package.
I don't disagree with you, but I will say this. And again, this comes from my experience of having been there and sometimes seeing the thinking, is that, you know, there's 5 weeks, I'm pretty sure there's 5 weeks between Night of Champions and Hell in a Cell. So sometimes the thinking is, on Vince's part, is we've just been, he doesn't want to always be like, buy our product. That we've just been hitting people up, hit the network for Night of Champions. Let's let people breathe for a week before we say, okay, buy the network for Hell in a Cell. So that you don't seem like you're constantly asking the audience to buy something. And you know, if, when there is 5 weeks in between, sometimes you got 3 weeks between pay-per-views. And so you have to almost start immediately the next night on Raw getting to the next thing. But when you have 5 weeks, you can probably take a week, catch your breath, and you still got 4 more weeks to promote the match. I think that could be the thinking. But
I would disagree with that thinking.
I was a little surprised that that the announcement just came out the way it did. That there was, you know, if you look at it from a storyline standpoint, the last thing we saw was Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman the next night on Raw. They felt like they had been wronged. They got robbed at SummerSlam, and they challenged The Undertaker to a rematch. And there was no answer from Undertaker. Wasn't there. Challenge was never answered. That's the last thing we saw. Now, all of a sudden, hey, the match is made. I think there could have been some storytelling there as to, well, why? How did The Undertaker come to accept the challenge? What did Lesnar and Heyman have to do, if anything? I mean, what, just the authority just decided to make the match and Undertaker has to show up? I think they missed a couple of pieces there where they could have told a story. That's the only thing that really surprised me, and that they just threw it out there.
I know that they want to have maybe a little bit of a breather, and obviously, too, they're trying to promote, go and watch this, you know, big show from Madison Square Garden on the network. But,
like I said,
this is a big match. It's not like, you know, it's not just any world championship match or any, you know, title match. This is supposed to be these two big monsters that have already had two matches, and now we're going to find out who's the bigger, badder man, and it's going to be inside Hell in a Cell, which is supposed to be the most vicious, volatile, violent match that we have. And to me, that's like, boom, get it out there and keep hitting people over the head with it. You cannot miss this match. This is going to be epic. This is going to be huge. Watch these guys tear each other apart inside the cell.
I agree. I think, you know, again, I think they'll have 4 weeks to do that. You know, I think they'll hit it hard for the next 4 weeks, which is probably sufficient time to do it. You know, I'm just surprised they didn't make more of a story out of how the match came about.
Yeah. So when it comes to this time of the year, I know everybody will say, well, the numbers are going to go down because you've got football to contend with. And, you know, maybe there isn't, to some people's thinking, maybe there's not as much of a emphasis on this time of the year. And like, we want to do solid shows, but at the same time, we know we're going up against football. And, you know, if we can just get to the Royal Rumble, that's when we can gear things up. So from even the time that you were there, what was the mentality like at this time of the year when it came to booking? Because, like I said, I mean, I don't think it's anything that bad, but obviously things kind of, you know, simmer down quite a bit, you know, and they're going to ramp back up.
Well, I mean, certainly there are the big four pay-per-views that you look at. You know, we used to have a grid, you know, of all the pay-per-views, and we would try to map out, have, you know, the matches, at least maybe some of the main attractions. What are the main events going to be? What are the world title matches going to be? You know, we try to have a plan, knowing, of course, that it could always change and will change many times. And, of course, you're going to look at your Survivor Series, your Royal Rumble, your WrestleMania, and your SummerSlam as kind of your cornerstones, and you definitely want to have the big, big attractions there. And then from there, it's just, you know, you're building around those four, and especially to Rumble and Mania. You want to have, you know, an idea of where you're going. But I don't think there's any thinking of, well, you know, we can blow off Night of Champions or, you know, whatever we're going to call, you know, Payback. Or, I mean, it's clear that those aren't the big events, but I think the idea is always to make, you know, you want a big attraction, something that's going to make people want to buy, you know, at least when they were pay-per-views, and it's probably the same now. Even, I guess the model's changed a little bit now with the network. But I don't think there was ever any sense of, all right, well, it's September, so we'll just coast till December. And then we'll start ramping things up again.
Yeah, that's just kind of what it feels like.
That mentality.
It almost feels to some extent, and I'm certain it's not necessarily what they're doing, but it feels like, okay, what can we do right now where if we know Rollins is going to be the champion come the Rumble, what can we do between now and then? Where we're not giving away too much, but yet we're continuing a story, at least when it comes to Seth as, you know, being a champion. Okay, so we can get out there that, you know, okay, Kane, that makes a lot of sense because we already had something right. built up there. So is that going to be a one-month thing or is that going to be a two-month thing? And then who else could we put in that position? Maybe a Dean Ambrose that we could put in there as well, where he can go out there and he can have really good matches and we can tell a story, but at the same time, it's not gonna kill Ambrose to get beaten, and it's going to help Seth as he continues being champion. It's things like that. Like, who's the secondary guys before we really, you know, put stuff on the front burner?
Yeah, I mean, that is how those things are mapped out. And like I said, there's a tentative plan. That's like, okay, we built this thing up with Kane. We need an attraction for Hell in a Cell. Perfect time to bring back Demon Kane, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. That's when we'll pull the trigger on him and Seth that we've been planting these seeds for. And it sometimes things are penciled in as a one-off, and if they get over, then you might take it into another pay-per-view. It all, you know, you try. That's where you try to feel the pulse of the audience, and you look at the numbers, and man, it's getting over. Let's go another month with it. And by the other side of the coin, you might have something scheduled for two, and it kind of dies after one, and you're like, well, we're not going to a second. Let's come up with plan B. And, you know, that's how, when I was there one time, that's how Mark Henry ended up on it. We needed an opponent for John Cena. John Cena was the world champion. We needed an opponent for him. I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were, but we had I don't remember what pay-per-view it was. But it's like, hey, John Cena needs a challenger. Let's look down the roster here. All right, how about Mark Henry? All right, Mark Henry sounds good. We're going to plug in Mark Henry. And, you know, this is one of my biggest claims to fame at WWE. I probably told you before. It's like, okay, what's the story? You know, what are we going to do with Mark Henry? And I'm the one that came up with the idea of the whole retirement gimmick, where Mark comes out, announces that he's going to retire, and then turns on John Cena. And that's how you have there's your story. And, you know, sometimes those things happen. And so, like I said, sometimes you just need to plug in and fill a hole, and you try to fill it the best you can.
Did you suggest he wear a pink suit jacket?
I did not.
Jacket?
Nope. The suit? No, that was all Mark.
It was a fantastic move by Mark.
It was. I love the salmon. Was it salmon covered? Colored?
Yeah, salmon colored, yeah.
It was perfect. But, yeah, when I pitched that to Vince, I told him, I was like, I'm sure if Mark gets out there, he'll start crying, and it'll be saying, oh, God, yes, he'll definitely cry. Oh, that's good. Ugh.
Mark is like one of the most underrated guys on that roster, especially from an acting standpoint, that he can go out there.
Question.
If you want him to smile, if you want him to cry, you name it, he's got it, man.
No question.
Why do you think they're not doing anything more with Mark these days? Because I haven't heard anything about him being injured right now.
Well, again, I'll speak from when I was there. You know, Mark had a history of injuries, and there was a feeling among some that Mark, not that he was faking injuries in any way, but that he maybe wasn't
in a hurry to come back.
Yeah, as much of a hurry to come back, or as resilient, or couldn't quite bounce back, you know, as quickly as maybe some other people did from injuries. So there got to be a feeling of, all right, we can't really, you know, he had his run as world champion where they were putting him over pretty big, but what happened? Why was that cut short? He got hurt again. I had to take the belt off him and hotshot it on to Daniel Bryan. So he wasn't a guy you could really look at and say, we can make a lot of long-term plans around this guy. And, you know, for a long time, it was supposed to be Mark Henry as the world champion against Sheamus at WrestleMania, and that was going to be Sheamus' big crowning moment, and it ended up happening against Daniel Bryan instead because Mark got hurt. I think that was really the time when Vince was like, all right, we can't really put a lot of eggs in Mark's basket, but he still has value. And he was still kept relatively strong after that, but I think then it just got to a point where I don't think Mark really, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I don't think he really has the passion to be the guy anymore. So I don't feel like, okay, I think WWE doesn't see him quite as that anymore, and I don't think Mark himself is, like, chomping at the bit to say, put me back, I want to be the guy, I want to be in the main event, and I want to be the guy you build. I don't think he has that passion anymore. I think he's kind of playing out the string at this point. Not saying that he's half-assing it or anything like that. I just think he's in a spot in his career where he knows it's coming to an end, and his role now is to put people over. and that's what you're doing. That's what you see him doing. I don't think you're ever going to see Mark Henry in a prominent position again.
Yeah, and I think you
and
have.
I understand it. I understand it from WWE's point of view, and I understand Mark. You know, I feel like he thinks he's had his run, and now he's on the downside, and it's okay to be in the spot that he's at.
Yeah, you have to have a certain level of competitiveness, and after a while, I think you kind of know your spot. And for Mark, he's probably like, you know what, I've been there, and I'm grateful that for the run that I've had, and I'm grateful to still be here. But you know what, however they want to use me, I'm cool with it at this point. I think
both sides are cool with where he's at right now. I don't feel like Mark. Again, I haven't talked to Mark since I left the company, but I got the sense even when I was there with him that he's not bitter or feels like he's being buried or anything like that. He knows that this is his spot at this point in his career. He's had a nice long career. He's been around for 20 years, and he had his run as world champion. And I think he's realistic. He knows that he's had a lot of injuries, and you know. As a promoter, I mean, as much as I love Mark, as I like him as a person, I love him as a character, the Hall of Pain and all that was great. If I'm the promoter, I don't know that I'm making WrestleMania plans around Mark Henry because he's shown me that because of injuries or whatever, I can't count on him to do that.
Last thing. So we know that Lesnar is taking on Taker coming up at Hell in a Cell. I don't expect them to square off against one another at WrestleMania next year. If that's the case, who do you think they will each face at WrestleMania?
Man, I tell you, I've thought about that, and I don't know the answer to it. I don't think they're going to face each other either. And I don't know. I mean, for a while, I thought maybe they'd go back to Brock and Roman again at Mania. You know, maybe Roman as a heel if they do that. But for Taker, you know, I just don't know. I mean,
to me, the only person that makes sense, I think that they might do there would be John Cena.
I always thought they should do Cena and Taker with the streak on the line. You know,
that would have been fantastic. I thought that was going to happen.
I did too. I mean, I threw it out there a couple times, even when Cena was champion, because then I thought maybe that would really cast doubt into, you know, who's going to win, you know,
right.
The streak against the title. People would be like, well, I know they're not going to end the streak, but man, I don't think they're going to put the title on Taker. He's a part-timer now.
I wanted them to.
The way you get out of it is you have Taker win the title. You give him a little short reign and have Cena take it back.
Yeah, I thought the story that they were going to tell was that Taker said, guess what? You know, like that he wins at WrestleMania, and then the following night he says, or even if it was 6 months later, I want one more match at WrestleMania. I do not want to hang it up and just guide through the streak. It means something to me. I'm still unbeaten at WrestleMania. But before I decide to call it a career, I've got to be one guy to legitimize the streak and put the ribbon on it, and that's Cena. And then you can build to that match. Didn't happen, obviously.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. I think whatever you do with Taker at this point, to me, it's lost some luster at Mania because the streak is over.
Could
I mean,
you?
It was nice that you know Bray got a nice little rub, I guess, from being in the ring with Taker at Mania.
Could you do? Could you do Roman against Taker, but Roman won?
You could. I mean, it all depends on what the story is. To me, there has to be a good story there because the story should tell itself, right? The story with the streak. Now the streak's over, so it has to be a personal issue of it, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's where if you had a heel Roman Reigns. And he somehow got into a Taker and said, I'm going to put you in your place in Mania.
Would be some heat, you know, especially if you had Roman go over at Mania and, you know, maybe it was really get out there if it was Taker's last match, you know, and Roman could then say, I'm the man that retired The Undertaker.
That'd be fantastic.
That'd be a nice little feather in his cap.
There you go. Because otherwise, I would think maybe Taker against Cena, you'd do Roman. I think you could do a triple threat for the title between the Shield guys. You could do Lesnar against The Rock now, I guess? Because I don't think we're going to see Rock against Triple H. Maybe I'm dead wrong there, but...
Yeah, I thought for sure that was going to happen in some form, you know, with Steph and with Ronda Rousey and all that. I don't know if that's still even a consideration at this point.
Well, Ronda even came out today or yesterday and said, you know, I'd love to be there. I'd love to do something, but I'm going to be filming a movie like halfway across the world. So it's not possible. And plus, Dana's not going to let her do it. Dana White even said something like, why the hell would you want to see her do anything in a wrestling ring and rather than see her fight? Because she's already too busy anyway, but I'd rather see her fight.
Yeah, but I think Dana White's smart enough to know, too. It only helps his brand by having her do something at WrestleMania.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, yes, there's a crossover there, but there are still plenty of wrestling fans who don't watch UFC, and all of a sudden they see this girl showing up, and, you know, they might be then curious to check out UFC and check out some of her fights. And they're kind of Dana smart enough to know that. So, but, yeah, I don't think they're going to do that either now. I thought for sure they were, you know, based off that angle that they did. And it just seemed to make so much sense. But, I mean, you know, I guess you're probably getting Seth and Triple H, I'm assuming.
If you don't get it before then. I think that could be like a Royal Rumble match.
It could be, but then the question is, well, who's Triple H working at WrestleMania? Because I'm pretty sure he's going to want to be in there against somebody. He's going to want a match at Mania.
Probably.
And if it's not going to be anything with The Rock, then who is it going to be? I mean, it seems like Seth would be a logical choice.
Especially at that location, because they want to put so many people. Vince wants to load it up. So, let me ask you this and wrap it up on this. Do you think the idea of Brock against Austin is dead?
I do. I mean, I know you and I have talked about it. I don't think Steve Austin's getting back in the ring. I mean, it'll be interesting what happens when Brock is on his podcast.
Well, that's why I bring it up, because that would be
an
interesting launch point to really stir the pot there.
It could be, you know. I'm just going to stick to my original story that I just think Steve Austin's never having another wrestling match.
Yeah.
But you never know. And I know when we talked about it last time, we were like, well, if there's any match that would get him out of retirement and, you know, the payday would be huge and, you know, this would be it, right? It would be to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 32, but I still feel like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've always been dead set against Austin coming back, or I've been perfectly fine with him not coming back, but that's like the one match where it kind of intrigued me, saying Austin against Lesnar, you could really tell a story there, but yeah, I don't think they're going to do it at this point. I don't think Vince wants to do it.
I think it's less than 50-50. I know. I think the odds are against it.
Yeah.
But as you know, the old saying of never say never, and certainly when you're talking about the kind of money that would be made, you know, for one night of work, like, I'm sure it's very enticing for Steve Austin to do. Who knows? You know, maybe it'll happen. My heart of hearts, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. So everybody can go online, go to check out the Eck Factor with Kevin over at KevinEckWrestling.blog or sportsblog.com, if I can get that right. Let me say that again. KevinEckWrestling.sportsblog.com.
Good job.
Kevin, I always appreciate it, and best of luck with your sports teams. Keep your head up, and remember, as a Cubs fan, I can say this. There's always next year.
Well, I don't know what we face each other in fantasy football, but I'm going to make sure if I have to hit the waiver wire, whatever I have to do to make sure I win at least one week, it's going to be against you.
Will we cut promos online via YouTube?
There's a very strong possibility that could happen.
Probably. I don't even know when we're facing each other. I got to look at the schedule. So, trust me, I was looking at my team this morning going, I've got a problem, even for this week, because I tried to pick up some guys in the waiver wire, and I did not get them. So, that's always the...
You're 2-0. That's the, like me, you get the guys off the waiver wire.
That's the worst feeling in the world when you're thinking, I'm going to get this guy, and then you check, you get your waiver wire email saying who got who, and then you're like, ah, oh, damn, I didn't get them. Brutal, so... Cool, man. Well, best of luck with fantasy, except when you face me.
All right. Likewise, Brian.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Hey, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.